I think artificial intelligence, maybe the way to look at it is it might allow us to open more windows. You know, if what you want is what you can see in that, I always like the analogy, I hope it works here, where you're trying to view Optimum as a beautiful mansion, and maybe artificial intelligence starts opening some more windows that you can say, oh, look, now I can see it in this way.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/ag. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Feed Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. Today we're going to talk about artificial intelligence, and my guest today is Dr. Dennis Jewell. And Doctor, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi. Well, I'm pleased to be here, and right now I'm a adjunct faculty at Kent State University, and I've worked in this industry a long time, both in the large animal nutrition, and then most of my career is in pet food science. So, if anybody wants to follow me, I'm the Dennis Jewell you find on Google Scholar. So that's my resume, if you will. I'm really excited about being here and talking about it. And we were talking about this before we started, not because I'm an expert in artificial intelligence, but rather because it's a fascinating space to consider and think. And so we're going to talk through, what you need to know and how we might get there. And I think it'll be interesting.
I agree. I believe it will too. So I guess we'll just start out with the first question, which is, how is technology currently shaping feed production? And what are some of the most significant advancements you've seen in recent years?
Well, there's surely been a lot of changes over my career. Basically, if you think about feed production, what you're trying to do is have a knowledge of what that animal needs, whether it be a large animal or a pet, and then what your ingredients contain down to the individual nutrients, because ingredients just deliver nutrients. Pets or animals don't have a requirement for ingredients. They have a requirement for nutrients. And then how to put them together, which is a tremendous skill, of course. And so what's happened and changed over the time of my career, which is many decades, I've seen how that changed in the sense of what we know about all of those characteristics. So what we know about the requirements is so much more. I once remember showing my major professor a text which said, swine should have salt as a component of their food. We know a lot more about what you put in a swine food than, maybe we should be sure they have salt, down to as you think about what the ingredients contain. We used to think about protein and fat, and then you start adding the minerals, and then you start adding the vitamins, and you start adding the micronutrients, and suddenly maybe even on the pet food side, I think maybe less for the large animal side, but in pet food side, a lot of nutrients that are not required, but you really want to know what's there because it influences the metabolism and the optimum nutrition of the pet. So then all those things come together at that manufacturing site. And so suddenly you have to know about how are you putting these ingredients into a food that's actually consumed. And that influences the nutrition that's delivered so that, in fact, how you cook a food, you can imagine making a cake. You can have all those wonderful ingredients. First of all, if you have bad ingredients, the cake's a failure. But even if you have all wonderful ingredients, if you put them together incorrectly, you also have a failure. And that's true on the pet food side and on, I'm sure, the large animal side, that you have to know that integration, as I think you are, as my host, you're much more familiar with that integration than I am. I rely on experts, of course, outside of my space. But that's what we're talking about today. So what the pet or large animal needs, what the ingredients and the nutrients supply, and you're going to be looking at both ones you deliver almost right straight up concentrate. If I have calcium carbonate, I know what that is. But if I'm putting in corn or soybean or chicken or oils, wow, there's a lot of nutrients to be known there, and then putting them together. So how's that changed? You know, when I started, you know, it's sadness, right? But we had calculators, and we, you know, I admit I started with slide rules, so that'll make everyone smile. But you know, we had calculators, and we put together, and then you made these assumptions. And then as that defined, and you could start getting actual, you know, sort of least cost formulations, so you could optimize what's presented to the pet, I always think, but also to the large animal. Because that you start looking at first, am I meeting all the requirements? Am I not causing harm? No, nothing's in deficit, nothing's in excess. But just meeting that is not optimum. It's not optimum for a large animal, or, you know, if chickens feed in there, not pet animals. You can do a lot more than just not on the requirements and not on the excesses. And so, you know, computers start coming together, and they start saying, okay, here's the formulation that's going to mix that. And I think that's where, you know, we'll talk later, but that becomes where artificial intelligence may bring in. Maybe we'll leave that to Les, but in my career, you know, moving from that pencil and calculator to now a very sophisticated computer program that allows, you know, much more of an optimum formulation. I think that change is clear. Understanding of the manufacturing process, that change has happened. You know, again, manufacturing process seems simple in a way, right? You're maybe on the large animal side, you're doing the grind and mix and maybe cubes or whatever. On the pet food side, lots of times form and process is really important, but that matters for optimum nutrition, and it can't be ignored, shouldn't be ignored in production. So if you know, for example, that some nutrients are becoming more or less available associated with that manufacturing process, then that needs to be taken into account. We do it. We certainly do it better than we used to. I imagine that that's one area where artificial intelligence will allow an enhancement that we haven't been able to get to yet.
Deep in the jungle, nature holds the secrets to healthier, happier chickens. Science is unlocking those secrets with Optient, the revolutionary lighting innovation for poultry farming. By mimicking nature, Optient Gradient Lighting creates a unique floor-level lighting gradient that improves feed conversion by up to 4 points, slashes energy use by 70%, and keeps flocks calm and stress-free. That means better animal welfare and a more efficient farm. Want to learn more? Optient Gradient Lighting is now available exclusively through your local Valco dealership or email optient@val-co.com today.
Yeah. Hey, well, this all makes me think too, and can lead into a question, I think. So when I started making feed, you know, you talk about overfeeding nutrients, for example, which we all used to do intentionally, right? Because we were just thinking about a tag. Us feed production guys, we were meeting a tag. And you know, one scoop was good, two scoops would be better kind of thing. And we never really thought much about the cost and all that incurred. So with that in mind, can you help us understand a little bit more about what role artificial intelligence, AI used to mean something else.
In a different context, it does mean something else. Here we're artificial intelligence.
Yeah. So with the intelligence part, how does that play in feed science, which is much more prevalent now in the feed mill level, you know, and how can it help optimize these processes and the formulations and even, you know, the actual production of the feed?
I don't know. Might be the easy answer, but I want to talk about it. I don't know, because in my space, I haven't used it. You know, we have very sophisticated programs. And I think anyone who say you're a pet food manufacturer or a feed mill, operator, you would want to know, again, I want somebody who understands what my ingredients contain, maybe someone else, or maybe you decide because of what the tag says or what optimum for that delivery is. And then you'd like that person, I think, that you're working with to understand both sides of that so that they can optimize that mix process to get it out. And so, you know, I think artificial intelligence, maybe the way to look at it is it might allow us to open more windows. You know, if what you want is what you can see in that, I always like the analogy, I hope it works here, where you're trying to view optimum as a beautiful mansion, and maybe artificial intelligence starts opening some more windows that you can say, oh, look, now I can see it in this way. It's got to be learned, right? So artificial intelligence is trained. And my experience is sometimes I go, wow, does that ever tell me my answer fast when I use some, you know, publicly available artificial intelligence? And sometimes when I feel like I'm the expert and it's quoting me, I know it's quoting me. I'm going, you know, I wouldn't have said it that way. And in fact, I'm not sure it's quite right, which just shows it needs to be trained, right? It's an algorithm. It's really, I don't know what to say. It's really not smart, but it's really good at doing that large breadth synthesization of the material available for it. And I just think there's going to be enhancements in all of those spaces. You know, you're going to know more about how that mix is coming together, maybe start understanding the multifaceted effects of manufacturing on sort of the nutrition that's actually being delivered in the food. I think there's a lot there. But right now you dial it back and say, you know, what I want is I want somebody who knows what's in that food. You know, maybe I know that and I'm the expert. Or maybe you've got a supplier that knows it, because lots of times I assume you as a manufacturer of food, you're relying on suppliers. They're supplying you a mix. They're saying, here's what's in that mix. And they give you a certificate of analysis or something that says, yes, that's what's there. Boy, you need that. And you need someone to sort of integrate that all together. And I just wonder, you know, how that software, which is artificial intelligence, wonder where that goes. It's got to learn that information. I assume there's good companies that are training their artificial intelligence, you know, software to enhance what's sort of an expert knows. I mean, at this point, what it seems most likely to do is to be able to combine that kind of expert opinion. I think someday maybe, you know, artificial intelligence will know more about, you know, cat nutrition than I do. I don't think it does today. But if you say, well, I'll take what I know about nutrition, you know, as an artificial intelligence reader of thousands of articles in a second or millisecond or whatever they use, and I'm now combining that with what I know about, you know, processing and the things that you're an expert on, and then I'm going to put that together with whatever's known on the ingredient side and put that all together. I think that's fascinating. Will I get a different and better food? You know, you sort of think so. But, you know, again, if you're a large animal manufacturer and you really care about that tenth of a penny per ton or whatever, you know, the margins are very different.
Yeah.
Pet food science versus feeding chickens. Maybe that pushes artificial intelligence a different way too, so that what it cares about and spends the effort and the money to accomplish on chicken food is, you know, gain per pound. And for pet food, maybe it's optimum immune health or optimum ability to walk and run and play. And right now, you know, as a nutritionist, well, some of those, they have to overlap. Maybe the increased information available in that space will be a large enhancement. They say it will, right? I mean, you read these articles, they say, whoa, this is like new science. It's marvelous. And I think it's new. Maybe it'll be marvelous. You sort of hope so, right?
Yeah.
Hope so.
And the truth probably lies somewhere between the people who think it's going to be the end of all of us and the people that think it's going to be able to do everything. And somewhere in between, there's a reality.
Yet to be found, right? So yeah. That's a reason to try and to touch experts who deal with this field. You know, we get to chat about it and I'm so interested in it. I think it's fascinating. But, you know, I'd go hire somebody if I was a manufacturer and I thought, you know, this is an area where enhancement's going to happen. You go find a partner because that you don't grow this stuff internally, I don't think. Unless maybe you're the largest company in the world and you can hire a staff.
Yeah, I would tell you that on the operations side today, we find AI to be very helpful in doing what I would kind of say is mundane tasks, running multiple scales at one time, for example, while we're weighing feed.
Yeah.
They do it 100 times faster than a person can and way more accurately. And I look at that as an opportunity then to free up the human brain to be thinking about maybe quality control and those other things. So AI has helped us out a lot in production by just doing those repetitive things very quickly, very accurately, very reliably, and they don't call in sick.
And how does that integrate back into process then? What is that doing to connect that to actually something that's changing in your process?
Well, the biggest thing it changes in our process is the amount of feed we can manufacture in a feed mill today. I mean, I started in 81 or 82. You'd make a 40,000 ton feed mill was a big feed mill, but a lot of that processing was done by hand and humans were doing it.
Yeah.
Now one man can sit there and make 800 ton, a 12 hour shift. We're making 300, 400, 500,000 ton a year in these mills with, you know, way fewer people, way fewer mistakes. It's really helped us address cost involved in feed. And, you know, you get into chickens and poultry and those kind of guys, they're making even way more ton than that. It's really helped us become more efficient and optimize.
That's fascinating.
Capital, which we all have to do, right? I mean, what we can get for our product drives that.
Everyone gains from that, right? Like you said, you're using that human mind to really have a higher level, and probably in some ways, I would think a more attractive activity than running the scales, which nothing wrong with running the scales, but if the AI can do it, wow, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's just fascinating because like I wouldn't have thought of that application. So where it all goes and how it fits, I think there's a lot of need to maybe sit around a table with people who understand this, you know, and say where does this fit? I think there's a lot of a desire for maybe finding someone who's well known in the area who relates with these factors that we're looking at, both running the machines, the external partners, the nutrition optimization, and bringing that together.
Yeah, and I think too for people like you and myself that like to think about the science aspects of things, it can provide so much data and accurate data. I mean, as far as what you're doing, what actually did happen, how long it took, you know, you can just learn it charts. It's amazing the stuff that it can show us. And
I really like that idea. And of course that would be a change. And we do it now with our statistical programs. It's not so much AI, but you can see that's just a progression in that direction where I can't handle 500 response variables, which might be kind of what you're looking at in the whole manufacturing system, bringing all these things together. So you ask that computer to synthesize it down to, like you say, maybe a couple graphs, maybe a couple of overall response variables that you can dig into if they start looking wacky. I could imagine that would be very helpful in this whole process of bringing, you know, optimum nutrition to the final consumer.
Which is kind of led into my next question was, you know, how can these digital tools help us in the feed industry and help us make better decisions and improve overall performance, I think.
Yeah, well, you've mentioned it, haven't you? And I just see it, again, it allows maybe on two sides, maybe there's just that enhancement of efficiency. And we always think, you know, we're in this to make a good business and I'm quite happy to earn a salary and to have my efforts make somebody else money. But it's not just efficiencies in dollars and cents, right? It's also efficiencies in things like use of energy, where you know, yes, you may be able to buy all the energy you want, but if you can do the same job with less energy, do it, you know. Or on the pet food side, of course, and we talked about this a little earlier. I can't remember before on or off camera, but you know, we overfeed a lot, of course, and because you're feeding to a population, and there's maybe an enhancement, but there's a real efficiency associated with the benefit to everyone, including, you know, the waste that's coming out of that pet, to make that optimum nutrition the right nutrition. And maybe artificial intelligence helps you bring that together. It surely could. Yeah,
it surely could, yes. So I guess the final question I had for you then was, if we look ahead, you know, into the, I don't know how well your crystal ball works, but, you know, do you see, what's the next big trend or innovation in technology that you think we might see?
Yeah, my crystal ball works really poorly. I want to say that I have really good examples of being wrong. I was once going to write a book called How I Succeeded in Spite of My Decisions, because that whole crystal ball thing, it hasn't worked. But it's kind of fun, and sometimes you hit it, and then you proclaim those. I wonder, you know, so where does it go? I wonder if, you know, on the pet food side, and I think it would be true on the large animal side too, if you could integrate the genetics of the actual consumer, the one eating the food, through this whole process, maybe again an opportunity for artificial intelligence that could start going, you know, I know I have this genotype out there, and so with that I want to rearrange all of these things that brings that optimum food together. I could imagine that being significant. You know, we're talking about artificial intelligence, right? That I don't know. Is it going to be big? I think that, you know, I read the articles everyone else reads, and, you know, they're flying the flags like this is big. And maybe it comes together and food gets manufactured better, faster, more precisely, more accurately too, I guess. I just get both of those. Though there's room to improve. And so that could all happen. I don't know what else. You know, if I cover genetics, you know, would you then cover environment too? Say, for example, if you were feeding, you know, chickens and you had, you know, would you formulate for weather? I ran some studies a while back meaning 40 years ago, showing that, you know, nutrition and environment really do interact. I never consider it, you know. Am I feeding, you know, dogs in Florida or dogs in Alaska? You know, you want a different food and you might choose a different food, but I'm not changing my formulation for that. I'm saying go find a different food. And so, you know, again, I could see that much more in line in a large animal where you're actually producing today what's going to be consumed tomorrow, and you could imagine that happening. Yeah, you're in the crystal ball stuff, right? That could be all fun. I think there's one last thing that maybe it could do. I almost worry about it, is that I wonder how it changes the interactions we have, right? So right now you and I are going to sit down. We're going to have a great conversation on what I need to produce in your facility to produce the product that we want to put out the door. You know, does that interaction, does it get enhanced with good artificial intelligence, like you said, that's now bringing graphs to the place? And I think, well, I need, you know, X, Y, or Z, and that's either easy or hard for you to produce. And maybe if you could get a graph that would say, you know, the return on that difficulty is this. I couldn't draw that graph today. Maybe the computer will.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think the thing I see from my side is to, we need the humans to use the artificial intelligence wisely where it applies, and to be smart enough not to try to use it where it doesn't. A lot of things you and I do are there's some art involved, right? There's some thinking that goes on nutritional stuff that I'm not sure they could do.
Computer died. It might be the fact that I live in northern Wisconsin. And anyway, so you were saying probably the artificial intelligence enhances the art rather than replaces it.
Exactly. Yes. Used correctly.
Yeah. And again, I would say, as I've looked at what's available today, sometimes it quotes me and I think it's wrong. I mean, I sort of know what it's reading, and it's not got quite the answer I think is right. And so you have to know that. And you have to, again, you probably have to know how it's trained and who's working with that artificial intelligence to train it for this very specific task we're talking.
Well, and the example I use with people is, I know many times in my life when I get a situation, my first thought is not always the best response. It's my second thought, or even my third thought, that turns out to be what I should do. And so I worry about just an artificial going bang and doing it, and then, you know, you can't fix it. So
yeah, and maybe there's enhancements there that we're just not seeing. But again, how I see it is, it's often presented as a very flat, pure, crystalline response, and often it's not so. Again, you start helping it. You're thinking about what you're trying to develop with that process. I think you're not using ChatGPT for this. You know, you're using somebody who has a program, who develops it for a purpose, and who interacts with you so that art that you know and that I know is actually enhanced by the
absolutely, absolutely. A lot of opportunity for companies to come alongside and help us with that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. And it's exciting. I mean, if I was a young scientist or engineer or operator or whatever, you know, I think there's some real excitement in saying, you know, it's not going to be what, you know, you and I did 40 years ago. It's not even what we're going to be doing in 2025. It's going to change. It's going to be good.
Exactly. Well, listen.
I always like giving a little pep talk for those folks who might be listening to that thinking, is this a career for me? And you can have some fun in this. I mean, maybe it's the computer jockey, maybe not the quite right term, but that guy who really knows artificial intelligence. Guy, boy, gender specific. It's, you know.
Absolutely. Because there's going to be people like me that are always wanting to use it that can't build it, or we can explain to people what we want, and they could come alongside and provide that for us, right? Because
absolutely.
Yeah, because it'll take somebody to put it together that knows what they're doing.
Yes.
Should anyway.
And the integration, right, that knows what they're doing is what we've talked about, diving down into the ingredients, diving down into the actual nutrients to be supplied, while understanding, you know, again, your area of expertise of the actual putting those things together. It's going to be complicated, and it's going to be a, you know, team where obviously artificial intelligence can bring value.
Yes. Yeah. And open-mindedness. I think we got to be open-minded about.
It's always a good, you want to work with that person who's open-minded.
It's time for our famous three.
That's exactly right. Well, we've got 25 minutes or so here. I've really appreciated time. I hope those of you watching have found this a little bit intriguing, and maybe you've learned something and you'd like to share this podcast or subscribe for some more. That'd be great. Doctor, I've got three questions we usually like to ask people off the cuff. First of all, I'd like to know what your go-to resource is, you know, within the industry, in your field of expertise.
Well, again, for me, you know, I'm a research scientist. I write papers for a living. I love to design studies and follow things from idea to application. So, you know, it's really pretty unique. Basically, a lot of just literature, research, peer-reviewed journal articles are kind of my go-to thing. And you know, lots of stuff gets into peer-reviewed journal articles that you have to understand the bias or the, I sort of like to say, I'm the old guy, the delusion of science, you know, that you just can't accept it because it's in print, but that's still the go-to, you know, that's my desire to be founded in basically biological truth, which is often reflected in peer-reviewed journal articles.
Yeah, that's logical. So how about outside of work? Do you personally have like a go-to resource that you rely on?
Well, that's pretty personal, but I'd like to talk about it. You know, I'm a Christian, and actually my foundation of the love of God, I think, enhances my understanding of biological life, so that we see order out of chaos. We see beauty out of creation. And those things are really, really beneficial to me and add a lot to my understanding of my, my view of biological life.
Excellent answer. I couldn't agree with you more on that one. That's my go-to book as well. Last question then, success. I'm just curious on your thoughts on why some people in your field are very successful, or any field, while others are not successful.
A lot of books written on that, isn't it? Let me give you my off-the-cuff answers. First of all, we sort of have to define success. Success for me is not making the most money or being the highest ranked person. If that's success, then probably my answer doesn't fit so well. But maybe it still overlaps. A lot of things are valuable in increasing success, at least in the marketplace. I have to say, I think intelligence is valuable, that if you see stuff fast and if you see answers quickly and get there correctly, that has value. My experience is it's probably not as valuable as the understanding, and I suppose people call it emotional intelligence, but you can have really, really just the best genius in the world and they can't work with people, and success is pretty tough and not success that I would want. So that ability to work with people. And then maybe the third tier I would add is sort of what I would call conscientiousness, where you're willing and able to follow rules and to complete jobs and to show up on time for work and to work till you're done, rather than it's time for a break and I gotta have my break. I mean, really successful people, I don't think work that way. So I don't know, those are thoughts off the top of my head.
That's one of the best answers I've heard, and you're the first person that's ever pointed out there's different definitions for success. I appreciate your view on that. So with that, we will close this podcast. Again, thanks to all of you for watching. I hope you'll come back and we'll see you again sometime, and may God bless you.
I've enjoyed the time. Thanks for asking me in.
You bet.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.